I think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 222 of Low Limit Football on this 29th of October, 2018 on the Beyond the Pitch Media Network. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we have breaking news out of Spain as a high-profile job has changed occupants. You know who is out, but who is in? We'll discuss. The Champions League is halfway through the group stage. We're going to discuss who the favorites are to lift the trophy in Madrid on June 1st. And Decision Day in MLS was full of drama and surprises. We're going to discuss this and look forward to the playoffs with our very special guest, our former co-host and good friend, Sir Bob Mike Orr, who will be joining us in about 15 to 20 minutes to break that down. Let me get my co-host in here right now, Mr. Roberto Rojas. How are you, my man?
Yeah, I'm doing well, Joe. You know, like you said, there has been a lot of drama coming out of Spain, you know, drama happening in the United States. You know, we saw a football pitch being ruined. No, not the one that you're really accustomed to in Europe, but an NFL pitch at Wembley. But regarding England, we have to start this the show on a sad note, unfortunately.
We do. And that is with the breaking news from yesterday where the chairman and the owner of Leicester City, and I'm going to butcher his name, but I'm going to try it anyway, Vishay Srivaddhanaphabra, who was the owner of Leicester City and the chairman, was one of five people to perish in a helicopter crash just after the Leicester City matchup on Saturday. I don't know the other people that were involved. I would imagine pilot, co-pilot. There were two crew members, three passengers were on board, including the chairman himself. You know, it's just another massive, massive tragedy in world football. You know, we've seen players lose their lives in airline crashes and things like that. We always talk about Chapecoense and what's happened there. And, you know, just to look at this man and look back on the tributes that have been paid to him since losing his life on Saturday have just been massive, massive. We saw Riyad Mahrez today score the only goal in a Manchester City-Tottenham matchup, which finished 1-0 to City. And in celebration of his goal, paid tribute to his former chairman. You know, just incredibly sad news. You know, you're almost grateful, Rob, that the loss of life was minimal because this happened right outside the football stadium after the match. I mean, this could have been brutally tragic with massive loss of life. But still, you know, difficult to comprehend that someone loses, you know, someone so loved loses their life so soon and so unfortunately. Rob, how about you?
No, it's really sad. Obviously, what you mentioned, a lot of tributes coming from the players. You know, the fact that this man was so influential in really becoming the owner and you know, starting a challenge that, you know, at the beginning was to get 40 points of that season, 2015-2016, and going off as 5,000-1 to win the entire Premier League. I mean, the fact of the matter is that this is going to impact, you know, English football as a whole, world football as a whole, but definitely to the city of Leicester City as a club. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's sad to see such a thing happen. Obviously, we don't know what the cause of the accident was at the moment. But certainly this man, unfortunately, can't butcher his name. I don't want to butcher his name as well out of respect, but the owner really was an influential man. I mean, you look at the impact that owners have, like Roman Abramovich at Chelsea or the Sheikh at Manchester City. You know, the fact that he also was so influential doing it for Leicester City just proves how big of an impact he's, you know, left us, unfortunately, so soon.
And you know, as a footballing community, as a footballing, I guess, civilization for our little niche of it, right, Rob? I think this man's greatest gift is going to be the excitement and the joy that many people felt in Leicester City winning the EPL title a couple of years ago, and just what that meant to the people, you know, that ran the club, the people even in England, I mean, just and around the world. Just you talk about it as one of the greatest sports miracles of all time, and he is at the center of that gift to the sporting world, and I think he should be remembered for those types of things and the things that he did there, and clearly the footballing world is certainly mourning his loss as of today. So our thoughts and prayers go out to his family, his friends, everyone at the Leicester City family and football club, and you know, in general, just a silly loss of life that unfortunately has happened, and life will move on and football will move on. So Rob, let's pay a couple bills here quickly. We want to get our folks over at Onnit in here, so just want to pay the bills.
Onnit is a health and fitness juggernaut dedicated to delivering total human optimization to its vast customer base of athletes, thinkers, fitness gurus, and entrepreneurs. Through a wide array of products and supplements, Onnit combines cutting-edge science, earth-grown nutrients, and time-tested strategies to help people reach peak performance. Whether you're climbing mountains or biking down them, building businesses or closing sales, chasing PRs in the weight room or running a marathon, Onnit is the brand you want in your back pocket. As one of the fastest growing health and fitness companies in the world, Onnit refuses to bring anything but the very best to market. Whether it be energy bars, protein shakes, creatine, or their flagship product Alpha Brain, Onnit diverse lineup of products and supplements are backed by science and research. You can save up to 10% off by visiting onnit.com and using the coupon code BEYOND.
Thanks, Rob. So we'll you know, instruct our listeners to definitely get over to onnit.com and use that promo code for 10% off. You know, enjoy the products that they're using right now, or that they're providing right now. So let's do a little trivia, Rob. How's that? In honor of Sir Bob trivia, we have trivia, right? And so obviously with the breaking news earlier today that Julian Lopetegui has been fired, a rather symmetrical career at Real Madrid, right? 14 matches, 14 goals scored, 14 goals conceded. You know, there were so many 14s, 14 letters in his name, right, Rob?
Yeah, but let's play. That's how you win the lottery. That's your new Powerball number. 14.
Exactly. So I have a three-part question regarding Real Madrid managers, and this is only within the last 25 years, because the list of managers at Real Madrid is quite long, Rob, and I didn't want to put that through you. So in the last 25 years, it's all we're focusing on. So from the 92-93 season,
yep.
The three-part question is, how many different people have coached at Real Madrid? How many people have been the manager? And I just want a number. I don't want you to name them all. There's a lot of them. One of them I'm going to give you that's an easy one, obviously, is let's do Fabio Capello, right? Fabio yep. Capello was a coach at Real Madrid. He's coached twice, but he only counts once in terms of
yep.
this list.
Definitely.
Okay. So how many different people have coached at Real Madrid since the 92-93 season? How many of those people have played for Real Madrid?
Oh.
And three, which one of those that have played for Real Madrid, which one has the most appearances?
Oof.
So three parts.
Let me ask you this. Is it double digits?
The appearances or the ones that have
everything.
Played?
Everything. Well, the managers. The number of managers.
The number of managers is double digits.
Okay.
The amount that have played is not.
Okay.
And the amount of appearances is certainly, it's triple digits.
Gotcha.
All right.
Okay. All right.
Give you the answer in about 45 minutes or so. Tonight's opening thoughts, Rob. We are halfway through the Champions League in the group stages. And it's been a great, great Champions League run so far. Certainly, you know, exciting to say the least. Just to give you a quick little rundown, Group A led by by Dortmund. Three wins are perfect. 3-for-3. Atleti in second place and 6 wins. Monaco and Club Brugge look like they're going to be out at this point. Group B, Barca and Inter lead the way. PSV and Tottenham look like they're going to be out at this point. Barca on 9 wins. They're perfect as well. Liverpool, Group C, 2 wins and a loss. Their only loss coming to Napoli, 1-0 in Naples. But Liverpool first, Napoli second. PSG in third place, 4 points. This goes 6-5-4, Rob. Very, very close group right now. Group D, Porto on 7 points. Schalke on 5. Galatasaray on 4 points. And Lokomotiv Moscow is pretty much out at this point. That's another tight group. Group E, Ajax leading the way, tied with Bayern Munich. 2 wins, 1 draw each. They are both on 7 points. Benfica and AEK Athens certainly bringing up the rear. Group F, another difficult group. We've got Manchester City leading the way at 6 points. Lyon on 5 points as well, right there with them. But then Shakhtar Donetsk and Hoffenheim are both right on their heels at this point. Shakhtar suffering the loss to City. Lyon and Hoffenheim drawing last week. Group G, Roma, 6 points. Real Madrid, 6 points. Certainly not a reflection of what they've been doing in their home league. CSKA Moscow on 4 points and Pilsen on 1 point. Look like they're going to be out at this point. And it looks like it's going to be 3 teams for 2 spots there. And Group H, Juventus, the only other perfect team right now. 3 wins on 9 points. United on second place on 4 points. They're probably in the driver's seat. Valencia, you know, with United having to play Valencia again is going to be tough. But United on 4 points, Valencia on 2. Young Boys look like to be the odd man out on 1 point as well right now. Rob, a couple other quick little tidbits I'd like to point out to you is that there are only 2 teams that have not conceded a goal yet in Champions League play. Do you know which two they are?
It's Borussia Dortmund. I think they've scored 8 goals and conceded none. And it's Juventus, both teams that are also perfect in their record.
Very good. Yes, that is correct. And, you know, obviously with Dortmund, Barca being perfect, Juve being perfect right now as well. The first thing I want to look at is what team do you feel is the favorite right now to win the Champions League?
Ooh.
And actually, let me add a second piece to it. Is it the same team that you thought before the tournament started?
Yes. The second part, yes. Now, regarding which one of those teams, if I had to choose one, I still think it's Barcelona. I just feel that the group that they're in, comparable to what Juventus are in, and with all due respect to Valencia, Young Boys, and Manchester United, I just feel that the group that they're in with PSV, Tottenham, and Inter are much more stronger. I mean, I think for me at this moment, with Juventus, and I think for me it's still tough regarding that, I think Barcelona is still the best team in the world at the moment.
Okay. Obviously, you feel that Juventus is on that plane as well with them. Is there anybody else you want to include in that group, or is it like a second tier once you get past Barca and Juve?
Well, I mean, you know, you kind of have to look at what's going on. I mean, yeah, what the thing is that with the group stage, it's so, how can I say this? It can surprise you. It could maybe give you something where you're not expecting anything. You know, that's the thing about the Champions League. Anything can happen. It's so unexpected, at least in the group stage. When it comes to the knockout stage, that's when a bit more of those games are much more even in this sense. I mean, you have to look at Real Madrid, you know, who have been poor so far in the league, but have only lost once in the Champions League. You look at Manchester United, 1-1-1 with 4 points. Manchester City are looking good as well, even though they lost one game. Ajax and Bayern are looking good as well. Liverpool are good as well, considering the fact that they've won one. They've won twice and have only lost one. PSG, on the other hand, if you look at this, Joe, I mean, PSG are the only team tied with Barcelona to score the most goals, but they only have 4 points. So, I mean, it's still very early. We're still at the halfway park. We still have, I believe, what, 2 more games left?
Three more. Exactly.
Three more games. So we definitely are looking at teams that are definitely in pole position to not just qualify to the round of 16, but also you look at teams that are in pole position to go out to the Europa League or out of the Champions League in general. So I think it's still early. I think once we get into the fifth game, the fifth match day, which is, I think, late November, if I'm not mistaken, that's when we'll start to make our choices. It's like, okay, yeah, they're going to make it to the round of 16 or they're going to be headed to the Europa League. I am still interested in that Group C because I feel that is still so even because of the fact that all the top three teams are separated by 1 point. Thanks for playing Red Star Belgrade, but still, I look at that group as the one to watch. I still think that is the group to watch so far at the moment. And it was one of the group of debts anyway, but I still feel that with Liverpool, Napoli, and PSG, both three heavyweights, I think, in their respective leagues and in world football as well, that's the group I'm very interested to see what happens.
Yeah, you know, I want to echo your thoughts there because I think I agree with you that Group C is going to be right down to the wire. I think we're going to be sitting on match day 6 and we're going to be wondering, you know, What do we need? What does each team need? Because I think there's going to be permutations for all three of those teams, Liverpool, Napoli, and PSG. And it's also a shame that one of those three teams is going to be going home. You know, I think what's shocking to me right now is in Group B, with Spurs currently sitting in last place, if you think about it, with, you know, because they're on 1 point, that PSV may go to Europa League and Spurs might actually go home, which I think is kind of surprising given how they finished last year and their performance really in Champions League, because they were close to eliminating Juventus in that round of 16. And it was really just a late goal by Juve that sealed it for them because they were moving through. So that one kind of surprised me. You know, looking back at these groups, I also think, you know, to echo your sentiments about Group C, I'm surprised that Group G is so close right now because CSKA Moscow on the, I believe they beat Pilsen? No, they'd beaten Real Madrid.
No, they beat Real Madrid.
Yeah, so you know, with a win of that magnitude, they stick their nose in the race, right? This is not just a Roma Real Madrid situation. This is Moscow's actually stuck their nose in that race there. And you know, maybe this is part of me is just being a little bit of a homer, but I think United really needs to worry about where they're going. I think this Valencia team, you know, I know you were kind of like, you know, all due respect, but I think Valencia is not going to be one of those pushover sides.
No, absolutely not. And like I said, I think when you look at more of a realistic standpoint, yes, you would think Juventus and Manchester United will qualify to the knockout stage, but you have to be careful in Valencia as well. You know, even though they did lose to Juventus, I think in the first game they did tie Manchester United, they did tie Young Boys, so they do have 2 points on the bag. Mm-hmm. But now they still have to get, and I believe on the last day as well, they play Manchester United, so that could really have permutations on the entire group as a whole.
And that game is at Valencia. Mm-hmm. So, which is even an even bigger deal because right now, you know, Manchester United, let's look at the group for a second. Manchester United right now is looking at this group where they're going now to the Allianz and to play in Turin right now against Juve. And we all know what Juve's done so far in this tournament. They've really got to look at this saying, listen, we need 3 points. I mean, they can't suffer another defeat, Rob. You know that Valencia is probably going to pick up the points against Young Boys on the second leg. And you're looking at that last match day, you know, for Valencia as do or die,
right.
and for Manchester United. So I think that that's going to be a tricky slope. United at best should really play for at minimum a tie, which you would expect the road team to do, but they really need to go get all 3 points. This is really squeaky bum time, as they like to say, if they don't get those 3 points. The other one that I want to go back to is Group C, like you talked about. And to think of these three teams, Liverpool, Napoli, Paris Saint-Germain, one of them is going to the Europa, right? So my question to you is that team automatically favored to win that team? You know, regardless of the third place teams that come out of the other groups, right now you're looking at PSV, you're looking at Galatasaray, you're looking at Benfica, Shakhtar Donetsk, CSK Moscow, and Valencia. Looking at all those other teams that are going to end up in the Europa as well, plus what the teams that they have there, Marseille, we saw a great performance out of Marseille at Le Classique this weekend in a hard luck loss to PSG. So that's no slouch that's going to be sitting down there as well. But you look at one of those three teams, Liverpool, Napoli, PSG, got to be the absolute, you know, head over heels favorite to win this win the Europa League, right?
I think given the fact that they're doing so well respectively in their leagues, yeah, you would put them as the favorites. But you have to also, and actually, you know what? I think I will say that because you look at the situation. How did Atleti go how did they win the Europa League? They got knocked out of the group stage. So yeah, right. I would have to go back to everything I said. Because you look at the Europa League now, I mean, you have a few teams, if it was at the moment, kept on, of who would actually win. I mean, Sevilla, Arsenal, even Milan to an extent. Those teams, those are the top teams that I would, Chelsea, I can't forget Chelsea. Those are the teams that I would point out as the top favorites to win the Europa League. But I think if you put in Napoli, PSG, or Liverpool, then I think the competition goes way back more in advantage to these three teams.
Okay, let me ask you one last question before we bring Mike in. These three teams, Liverpool, Napoli, PSG, are all three of them as good or better than last year's Atletico Madrid? And if one of them or some of them aren't, which ones do you feel are not as good as last year's Atleti?
If I had to choose one?
You can choose as many ones.
I'll choose one.
Okay, go ahead, pick one.
Napoli.
Okay.
Just because Liverpool made the final, and PSG, I think, are a much better side than well, not better, but I think Atleti are just even with PSG in that instance. So if I had to choose one, I would have to pick Napoli.
And you're still taking...
And with no due respect, they are a good team as well, but if I had to choose one, yeah, I would put Atleti in this time.
Okay. And then, but obviously that would also involve Napoli getting knocked down to the Europa and then going from there. So one team I'm actually looking for, and I was going to say I didn't mention them because they're in second place in Group A, and that is Atleti. And they look like they're going to go through to the knockout stages as well. So let me just do a little Twitter work. I'm sorry, not Twitter work. I'm going to actually do some Skype work here so I can find Sir Bob, and we'll get him added in here because we're going to change gears. We're going to jump continents. And we're going to go and get this show on the road. So let me do this here. Let me add him into the call. Obviously been a while since we've talked on the phone with him, and it'll be good to kind of catch back up here. So hopefully let's see if he's gotten added in here. And I believe we have him now joining us or returning to the show, our good friend, Sir Bob Mike Orr.
Hello,
Mike.
Guys.
Mike, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, good, good. So I know we're switching gears here. We're running into MLS, and we're going to talk about that. I'm going to actually turn the mic over. Usually I open with a question for our guest, but because we're doing Eastern and Western Conference, and Rob is going to handle the Eastern Conference first, I want Rob to take over right away, and we'll talk about Eastern Conference and what happened there, and then we'll come back to me, and we'll close with the Western Conference. Mike, Mike and Rob, the mics are both yours.
Definitely. Looking back into the end, Mike, welcome back to the show. It's been too long. You guys love to hear my voice after so long, even though you probably listen to it every week. But having said that, we'll go into the Eastern Conference right now, where we did see a lot of dramatic changes, I would say. You look at the team in the East that was not just the best team in the East, but you look at the best team in all of MLS. You look at Atlanta United, the top team with the top goal scorer and the potential MVP in Joseph Martinez, great players like Miguel Mirón as well. You look at Barco, Greg Luzan in goal, Tata Martinez, the coach. You would think that they are the undisputed favorite and best team to win the MLS Cup, and rightly so. But on the last day, Atlanta couldn't get the job done against an already eliminated Toronto FC, which basically springboard the New York Red Bulls straight to 71 points to win their Supporters' Shield and to be, essentially, if they do make it to the final, get home field advantage. I mean, Mike, looking at this as a whole,
And the most points ever, Rob, in a season.
Correct. That's right. Most points ever. Both these teams were going to have the record for the most points in the season. But having said that, Mike, you look at both these teams, the Red Bull and Atlanta United. You look at, and then obviously I'll go to the games afterwards in the knockout stage. But, how big of a blow is this for Atlanta United, considering the fact that they were easily the best team in MLS for many months, I would say. How big of a blow is this for Atlanta United? And, do you feel that their confidence is much lower now heading into the playoffs?
I don't really think so. I guess it was a bit of a blow not winning the Supporters' Shield, but I guess either team they're going to face in the next round, I would think that they'd be able to beat, and they were probably going to meet up with the Red Bull at some point to win the East regardless.
Definitely. And Joe, and actually I'll go back to you. I mean, do you still think that with the team that Atlanta United have at the moment, they're still the best team in MLS?
They're one of the most complete teams for me. I think defensively they're very, very good. Their midfield is probably the best in the league. And when you've got Joseph Martinez, even though his pace had fallen off, Rob, you got to remember he scored that, I believe, that 28th goal with eight matches to play, and he only scored two goals over the last eight matches. So you wonder about the tread on him and the wear and tear of the overall season. But I think soup to nuts, when you look at the team, I would say they're probably the most complete team in the playoffs right now.
Definitely, and I think with the return of Miguel Mirón back to the team in time for the playoffs, that might even straighten Atlanta much more quicker heading into these games. But looking at the two knockout games that we're going to have, obviously we have two wonderful matches so far. We have DC United, led by Wayne Rooney, who, essentially came in and really changed gears for this team against the Columbus Crew. I mean, Mike, what are your thoughts on this game, and what are you looking to, what are you expecting out of these two teams heading into this game in Washington, D.C.?
DC definitely got off to a really bad start this season, as I think we know. And then Wayne Rooney came along, and their fortunes definitely changed. I don't think either they've met since Rooney came to DC, so I'm not sure if that would have played into the two games that they split earlier in the season. I think that... DC United has got to be definitely the favorites in this game. Columbus had a good season. The end of it wasn't that good. And as I think we all know in the MLS playoffs, you got to come into them on a roll or usually you don't go very far. So I would think that DC United's going to win this game fairly handily.
Definitely. I think they are the best team, and I think they are the favorites considering the players that they have. So for me, I would have to put DC United on that one. Going back into New York City, we're going to talk about New York City FC against Philadelphia Union, who play on Halloween and will actually be playing back-to-back. Considering the fact that they played yesterday a 3-1 victory to NYCFC, meaning that they will head back to Yankee Stadium and take on each other over there at Yankee Stadium. I mean, Mike, this is certainly a really interesting matchup, but I think considering the fact of how great NYCFC has been so far with the likes of David Villa, you know, you look at other players that have been really important to this team, I mean, you have to say NYC is the undisputed favorite, or do you feel that Philadelphia Union have a chance in this game?
No, I'm with you, Rob. I definitely think New York City's got to be the favorite, especially given playing at Yankee Stadium, where I believe, don't quote me, but I think New York City FC only lost once at home all season. So definitely home field advantage, probably the biggest home field advantage. And that usually matters in MLS, the home field advantage. And I also think I might have read that Philadelphia has only won once ever at Yankee Stadium. So, like the last game, I think it's pretty clear. Obviously, there could be upsets, but I even think more so that New York City's a bigger favorite than even DC United.
Definitely. No, absolutely. Joe, what do you think about this game?
Yeah, this is a tough one to call, too. I mean, with this one, you know, like you said, NYCFC playing at Yankee Stadium is always difficult. I like the fact there is a familiarity between these two teams now. You know, we saw the 3-1 result, and I think it makes a statement with NYCFC to come out and win that handily over this Philadelphia Union side. And then, like Mike, like you said, and I was just trying to find the statistics, you know, NYCFC last year, where we saw them actually be a better road team, has been a much, much better home team at Yankee Stadium this year. And then with the Union, you know, being a good team at home, not being able to get into a spot where they would keep that match, I believe, and I just got to go back and look at the standings, but if I remember correctly, if this result would have gone the other way, this game might have been played at, in Philadelphia instead of playing it in New York. So I think this is a huge blow for the Philadelphia Union, you know, to suffer a big loss like that 3-1 on the last day of the season at a team that you're going to just turn around and face again. I think it bodes very, very big for New York City.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I definitely agree, especially being at Yankee Stadium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm just going to throw in the confines of the stadium. I understand that both teams have to play on the field, but the field is so unusually situated that I think the experience of NYCFC having played many, many more matches there, I think will come to their advantage as well.
Definitely. Now, obviously, I'll actually go back to a team that's close to your heart, Mike, and obviously, you know, the defending champions will not be in the playoffs. They have missed it out for the first time in quite some time. But I just want your thoughts on this, Mike, honestly, as a Toronto FC fan. You know, what went wrong? Because you look at how inspired they were last season with the likes of Giovinco and Altidore and Bradley as one of the key players of this team. What do you think went wrong this season for Toronto FC?
Well, after getting so deep, actually, to the final of CONCACAF, I just think they were behind the eight ball all season, right from the beginning in the MLS, and then some key injuries to Altidore, a few others, and they just, you know, these rosters aren't deep in MLS, and not to use it as an excuse, but they just weren't good enough this season, during the season, and I don't know if that can all be blamed on the CONCACAF playoffs or the CONCACAF Champions League, but yeah, it's the lack of depth really hurts in MLS, I think.
Definitely, and we kind of saw that. And Joe, we're going back to actually go to the Western Conference right now because, you know, you look at that depth, that one team in particular missed out on the final day of. What's going on in the Western Conference?
Yeah, you know, I want to jump into that because that was fascinating to me. But before I jump into the Western Conference, Mike, I just wanted to close with a quick TFC question. If you had to pick one thing that they should do, a move that they should make moving into next season, what's the one move that you think TFC should make to kind of get back into that, at least the playoff rounds, if not higher?
It's really tough, Joe, because they're going to be in CONCACAF again, in the Champions League again next year. And I just think that it's really hard for MLS teams if they want to try and if they're really going to go for the Champions League. It really hurts you at the beginning of the MLS season. And sometimes if you get a couple of key injuries, you just can't recover.
Right. No, it's very, very true.
And to answer your question, I really don't know if there's anything they can do better. I think the team was still a good fighting team throughout the season. And unless you can add some more money so that, you know, you can add three or four more depth players to your roster, it's really tough if you're going to go for the Champions League.
No doubt. No doubt about it. So let's jump to the Western Conference real quick. And, you know, it's funny. I was on Talk Sport last week where I was on with Adam Catterall to talk about previewing Decision Day in MLS and speculating into the future what would be some of the playoff scenarios and situations that we were looking at. And one of the things I said, and I'll never forget this now, was I said, how great would it be that the best team in MLS in Atlanta United, which at that point it looked like that was going to be the case, would face the great Zlatan Ibrahimovic in the MLS Cup final in Atlanta in front of 70, 80,000 people. Speculating that might be an entertaining final. And now we sit in a situation where I will only get that half right because with the what was an amazing turn of events, probably the most exciting match, Mike, on the weekend, you might say. The LA Galaxy jump out to a 2-0 lead, but a brace by Manotas, which moved him into the top two or three people at the end of the season in terms of goal scoring, brought Houston all the way back, 3-2 victory in LA, knocking LA out of the playoffs and sending Real Salt Lake to the playoffs. Mike, I want to look at this particular matchup from a Real Salt Lake standpoint, because now they go from being out, which they were almost assured of it. You know, Houston was finishing towards the bottom of the table in the Western Conference. You had Zlatan, who was the second leading goal scorer, I believe, on 22 goals in the season for MLS. This all pointed LA Galaxy's way. And then all of a sudden, even 50 minutes into the match, it was still pointing LA Galaxy's way. And all of a sudden, it just fell apart on them. And now Real Salt Lake goes from being home for the winter to being into that first round, that matchup against LAFC, which is another match we're going to talk about in a minute. How does Real Salt Lake prepare for this where, 40 minutes prior, they were home?
I'm just touching on what you said at the beginning first, Joe. Mm-hmm. We're also going to miss out on what looked like it would have been El Tráfico, too.
That's right. That's right. Because there was a huge opportunity for that to have an LAFC LA Galaxy matchup in the first round of the playoffs, and actually it would have ended up that way if LA Galaxy would have won the match and advanced into the playoffs. It would be El Tráfico for the first round, which would be phenomenal.
Yeah, that would have been great too. And now to answer your question, I guess Real Salt looks like takes it like they won the lottery.
Sure.
They got to be happy just to be in the playoffs. I definitely didn't think they were going to make the playoffs even going into the weekend. So I think that's how they approach this game. Glad to be there and let's just go for it.
So now, let's look forward because obviously there were so many options at who was going to pick up that first round bye. Moving into this round of the playoffs, LAFC was in that position. Sporting KC was in first place. FC Dallas was next up in line. But obviously with Sporting Kansas City beating LAFC 2-1 on the weekend, knocking LAFC into this first round matchup against Real Salt Lake, the next best option was going to be FC Dallas. And you thought for sure FC Dallas would not blow a match against the Colorado Rapids, one of the worst teams in MLS. And what happens? They blow a match against Colorado Rapids, losing 2-1 on the weekend, giving the opportunity to play in that, to get that first round bye to Seattle, which was amazing to me. Seattle had been floating, mid table in the Western Conference pretty much all season. They've made this nice little run at the end here. I want to say, and I'm just going back to look, I want to say they'd won their last five or six matches to get into the playoffs here or something darn close to that. What do you think of Seattle's chances, Mike, moving into the playoffs, getting that first round bye and really just coming in on a super high note?
And the third year in a row they've done it, Joe. They've been in the finals the last 2 years. It's the Seattle way.
Yeah,
you know, they slip under the radar all season, and then all of a sudden, the last month of the season, there they are.
Yeah, it's
top
true.
Of the table, and they're doing it without Clint Dempsey. So, yeah, they definitely are came into the playoffs exactly the way you want to come into the playoffs in the MLS on a high note.
Yeah, they've won 8 of their last 10 matchups. Losing the last time they lost was September 23rd to the LA Galaxy on the road. The last home loss was September 19th to the Philadelphia Union 1-0. But since then, Seattle Sounders have beaten Colorado Rapids 4-1. They beat the Houston Dynamo. They beat Orlando City, Houston again, and then the Earthquakes. Granted, the last 5 matchups that they've won straight have not been the strongest of opponents. But I think the Dynamo is a little bit more of a challenge. But
five wins on the trough in the MLS, regardless, is unusual. So it's definitely very good.
I agree 100%. I completely agree with you. So let's look at the matchups coming up here midweek, and we'll talk about each one individually. Obviously, we talked a little bit about NYCFC Philadelphia Union. Do you see, Mike, a repeat there where NYCFC beats the Union and advances?
We're back in the East for a second.
Yeah, we're just going to check out the matchups this week.
I don't see Philadelphia at all coming. I think Philadelphia is at least a year away. They've got a couple of those young kids at the back that were really exploited at the weekend, and I think, I don't think Philadelphia has much of a chance.
Okay. The second matchup.
What about you?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think NYCFC. Rob, you're probably the same camp, right? NYCFC over the Union.
Definitely, 100%. Yeah. I think they're much better than the Philadelphia Union.
Yeah. The other matchup on Halloween is going to be FC Dallas versus the Timbers, Mike. Dallas had rode pretty much top of the table all season long, but losers of their last 3, they're going to get the Timbers, who are never going to be an easy out, but stumbling a little bit here as well at the end. How do you see that one falling, Mike?
Actually, FC Dallas has been terrible since August. They've gone 4-6-3 since August. They definitely looked like they were going to have the bye, and then they're in a death spiral. I think they haven't looked good for a few months, Joe. So yeah. I think out of the 3 games that we're talking, or the 4 games, sorry, that we're talking about, this one probably has, I'm still taking FC Dallas, but this one has the best chance for an upset, I think.
The biggest potential. And you're right, like I said, even just coming in, limping in on 3 straight losses, this is a team that finished 5 points out of first place. They could have easily turned any of these last 3 results around, obviously including the loss to the Rapids on the weekend, which you wouldn't expect, but losing to a hot DC United and then Sporting KC, their path has been a little tougher, but certainly at the end here that they're going to have to do something to get this turned around, or the Timbers are going to knock them out of the playoffs as a big upset. So we already talked about DC.
Dallas has had a lot of trouble scoring goals too.
Yeah, they certainly have as of late. Only scored 52 on the season so far, one of the lowest totals going into the
and
playoffs.
And I think their forward Maxi Uredi has scored 2 goals since May.
Wow. Okay. So they're definitely in trouble. So
I'm still taking FC Dallas in that one, Joe, but I wouldn't be betting on it.
No, definitely. On the Thursday matchups, DC United, Columbus Crew, we've already talked about that one. And, Mike, you had DC United advancing over the Crew, correct?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts before we move on to the last one about the Crew getting saved? Do you think that's going to be a done deal? It's going to be official?
I hope so. I think they're one of the original teams in the MLS. The players that were able to ignore, kind of put the distraction that was off the field to the side, and they had a really good season, I think, to make the playoffs. I wouldn't have thought they were going to make the playoffs to start the season, that's for sure.
Certainly. And then the last matchup, LAFC, Real Salt Lake. Like you had said a little earlier, Real Salt Lake is just kind of happy to be there. They won the lottery, they're there. And you think this is LAFC running away?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it's running away. I know that I think they played twice this year, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, because they're both in the West. I think LAFC won both of those games, and I think they'll come through and win this game. But I don't think they're going to blow them out or anything. A goal or two, maybe.
Okay.
2-0, 2-1, something like that. Somewhere but that yeah, I think LAFC for me is definitely the favorite going into this one.
So looking ahead, you know, just before we let you go here, I want to get your prediction on the MLS, you know, for the title. We're figuring NYCFC is going to move through. We're figuring FC Dallas, but there's potential for an upset there. DC United over the Crew, LAFC moving forward. They'll all join Sporting Kansas City, Seattle Sounders, the Red Bull as the Supporter Shield winners, and Atlanta United. If you had to pick from those eight teams, Mike, who's your champion?
I do have it in mind. I think the East is going to be the toughest team to pick which team's going to come out of the East, whether it's going to be the Red Bull or Atlanta, but I think in the West it's going to be Kansas City, and that's who I'm taking to win the MLS Cup.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. That would be, I believe, their third title, if I remember correctly, in MLS, so that'd be amazing. So, Mike, before I let you go, how's the poker been going?
Not too bad. Mm-hmm. Ups and downs, like always. There's a lot of variance, as you know, Joe, but the last few weeks has been pretty good, actually. Thanks.
Oh, good, good, good. So hopefully we'll, you know, as Rob and I keep hoping, one of these days we're going to see you on TV, right? Hoisting that
from your lips to God's ears, Joe.
A nice shiny bracelet is in your future, my friend. That's what I'm hoping for. So, all right, man. It was great to catch up with you, and looking forward to, you know, and what many people don't know is we talk a lot behind the scenes. You know, Rob and I, you know, with you, we still get to chat about all things football, politics too. But, you know, I know that we both enjoy it and look forward to keep on doing that and have you back again, man.
Did you see the Man City game?
I did not. I got home too late.
Okay.
Yeah, but 1-0. 1-0 City.
I guess the reason I'm bringing it up is the pitch certainly looked like an MLS pitch.
Oh, a little chopped up with some gridiron down there, huh?
Straight out of Gillette.
Yeah, it looked exact. It was barely even the hash marks were hash lines and stuff were barely even gone.
Oh wow, unbelievable! Well,
but it definitely makes the job a little easier for the refs on calling the offsides, I think.
Oh, it sure does. Yeah, because extra lines is extra grids. So, all right, man. Yeah. Thanks again.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Talk to you soon.
All right, bye. Okay, see you, Rob.
And that was Mike Orr, the Sir Bob, joining us back on the show here. A lot of fun there. So Rob, you know, we asked Mike, and Mike gave us Sporting KC as the champion, man. And I'm going to give it to you now. Who you got as the MLS champion?
Atlanta United.
You got Atlanta United, and I've got to say, Sporting KC looked really good yesterday.
They do
against
LAFC.
Really
good. I put them in the final actually with Atlanta, but I still put Atlanta to win it.
I want to take the Red Bulls. Yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to take the New York Red Bull. And it's going to disappoint me, and I'm going to be upset because I like this Atlanta United team. I like Tata as a coach. I like Miguel Almiron, Joseph Martinez, what he's done. I love the project and what they've done at Atlanta. I as much as I would love to see them win, I think the Red Bull right now it's storming. And really, Rob, think about it. They're flying under the radar. You could argue they've had the greatest MLS season of all time right now.
Exactly.
You could put them in that discussion. It's just,
but that's the thing. If they don't win it, they don't win it.
That's true. That's true.
And everyone forgets about that, and they're just the team that has the record.
And we had the same discussion about Toronto FC last year. If you remember, they won the Supporter Shield. They won MLS Cup, and then we talked about can they pull off the treble? Can they pull off the CONCACAF Champions League victory? And I think Red Bull made the CONCACAF Champions League this year. So it remains to be seen if they can pull off a treble as well.
100%.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Hey, let's jump back across the table. Let's jump back across the pond, and let's talk about another treble winning side or potential treble winning side as of a year ago. And that's the other breaking news that happened tonight, in that with Julian Lopetegui being fired, sacked at Real Madrid, and in place of him will be Santiago Solari, who will be jumping in there and taking over the head coach right now as an interim, right, Rob?
That's right.
So, you know, this is a long time coming. Certainly on the heels of the 5-1 bashing in El Clasico yesterday. You're surprised? Were you surprised he made it this long, or is this the right time to kind of send him on his way?
I thought that if he wasn't sacked I believe last weekend when they lost to, was it Levante, if I'm not mistaken?
They did, 2-1 to Levante.
Yeah, if it wasn't happening there, and Joe, you remember this as well. I told you this. I thought to myself, if he loses El Clasico, and which I predicted that he would, then he would get sacked, and rightly so. Mm-hmm. Comes at this moment, and you know what? We're not surprised. But the one question, and Joe, I'm actually going to go back to you on this one.
Okay.
It's not Julian's fault, mind you. I don't think it is. But is it? Do we have to start putting the blame on the players? And even do we have to put the blame on Ronaldo for him leaving?
I'm not okay. First of all, I'm going to take the last one. I'm not putting the blame on Ronaldo.
Well, obviously, no, that one's a joke. But
yeah,
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Is that big? Is that too?
But
was his departure so big?
You know, that's the question. Is the part that Ronaldo played on this team that big that losing him has caused them to go into this type of a spiral? I'm going to answer that question, by saying, yeah. Okay, I think that's a huge part of it. And I'm going to tell you why, though. The proof, you know, this is like a math equation. How, you know, here's the answer. How do you prove your answer? The proof to my answer is the attitude and the spirit that I see Juventus play with now.
Right.
That, even with the great, great Gigi Buffon there, I did not see this type of bravado out of the style of play that we saw at Juventus. None of the other pieces have changed, mind you, right? I mean, everyone is still there. The only other piece that's missing is Gonzalo Higuain. But otherwise, and they brought Bonucci back, and we can talk about that and the benefits of bringing back Leo Bonucci. But there's an inspiration that is in the Juventus players, and I don't see that type of character in the Real Madrid players. I didn't see it yesterday in El Clasico. And I mean, this is El Clasico, Rob, right? I mean, this is not, yep, this is not just us playing Girona. This is Barca. This is the big time. This is one of the biggest rivalries in all of sports. And those players, except for a 20-minute block in the second half, were not up for it.
No.
The spirit that Barca played with in that first half was beyond anything Real Madrid brought to the table that day. And I think that there's a big chunk of that is the Cristiano Ronaldo part. The other thing, though, I want to bring up is, and I was looking at this, Real Madrid did nothing in the transfer market with the loss of Cristiano Ronaldo, right? There was no Galactico brought in. You know, Thibaut
Courtois. Actually, false. There was one. He didn't play.
Who's that?
Vinicius.
Is he a Galactico, though?
Well, he's the new. They want to call him the new Galactico,
he's not like there yet.
In 45 million euros.
He's not Zidane.
No, obviously
he's not Figo. You know?
Would think for paying that much amount, that is Galactico numbers.
I think they expect him to be there.
Yes.
You know, I think they hope he will be there. But to say that he is there right now today, no way. He's not there yet.
I'm not saying that, Joe. I'm just saying. The amount,
okay.
I think they expect him to be that. But I just feel that you're saying that they didn't do much in the transfer window. And, you know, they did to an extent, not too much. But if you look at one really quickly, who I think could have probably had a big effect, not too mm-hmm. much of an effect. It's not Thibaut Courtois. It wasn't Mariano, the so-called replacement of Cristiano Ronaldo. But it was Vinicius Jr.
Yeah, but
I feel that
not playing
he
them.
Has not been given the opportunity yet.
Right. I agree. I agree with you there. But I think you go back and look at the Mariano signing. He's not turning into anything what they thought it was going to be. Okay. Thibaut Courtois, they brought him in, and I'm not going to put any of those five goals on him yesterday. And I'm not saying that Keylor Navas would have gotten them either. Okay, let's make sure we establish that fact. That was more of class from Barca than it was awful from the goalkeeping at Real Madrid.
And I think mistakes from Rafael Varane more than the answer.
Oh, sure.
Almost.
Sure. Oh, yeah. But I think the Vinicius Jr. signing was not the Gareth Bale signing. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think when they signed Bale, that was a Galactico. That was that kind of signing. That was that superstar. They were bringing the next greatest thing. Now, if they'd signed Kylian Mbappe, that's the superstar. They bring Neymar in, that's the superstar. But Vinicius Jr. was not the superstar. He may be. So, you know, don't get me wrong. We might look back on this conversation 3 years from now and go, oh, my God, he's the greatest player in the world.
Right.
But one, you got to give the kid a chance, right?
Yep.
And two, he's got to take advantage of that chance and actually be that player. So,
yep.
You know, and I think we look at that, I also think the circumstances that Lopetegui came in on were not the greatest. And Rob, to get back to your point, I do think you got to blame the players a little bit. You know, Rafa Varane's a World Cup champion. Marcelo's the greatest left back right now in the world. He's the only one scoring, by the way.
Exactly. He scored, I think, three of the last four goals Real Madrid have scored.
Yeah, yeah. I believe that's correct. Yeah, a defender. You know, Benzema, not producing. Bale, not producing. Isco, not producing. Asensio, not producing. You know,
even Modric.
Even Modric, Cruz.
The so-called best in the world.
Not producing. Not producing. So it's one thing. And is that a function of Lopetegui's system? Is that a function of the inspiration that these players have right now because of Lopetegui? I don't know. But, you know, you definitely got to put some of the blame there. No doubt about it. You've got to put a nice scoop of blame there, okay? I agree. So Santiago Solari taking over. The rumor was, though, this morning, Rob, that it was going to be Antonio Conte, but last minute, I don't know if it was a change of heart or what, but it was not going to be Conte. You think Solari is the right choice?
For Real Madrid standards? No.
No.
I mean, certainly you look at Solari, I believe he coached not Castilla, but the B team, which mm-hmm. is not Castilla. What am I saying? That is Castilla.
Yeah, Castilla's the
so
B
he did
team.
Coach. He was coaching Castilla, so he knows Real Madrid, and I think he's coached the U team over the last 5 years. So he definitely knows the Real Madrid, ideology in terms of youth. Mm-hmm. What this could mean for the long term, this could mean a lot of chance for youth. Considering the fact that these players are not having their best moments, considering they're what, in their 30s, 20s, this could be an opportunity for youth, like players like Vinicius Jr. or Federico Valverde or Mariano, mm-hmm. to get their opportunity, and Asensio, Orizola, get those type of players in and get a chance. But short term, it's just until they're waiting for the right man. Yes. You know, rumors have speculated it might have been Conte. I've heard Roberto Martinez, if you haven't heard about that, Joe. So, yeah, I think, remember, you know who was in this exact same position? I believe I was, 2 years ago?
4 years ago.
No.
A little over three.
A little over three, yes. Who was in this exact same position?
I was
going
to say, his resume looks awfully the same to the last guy. Right?
Exactly.
It looks just like Zidane's resume. So we'll see. Maybe they catch lightning in a bottle twice. And Solari, by all accounts, is well-liked. Zidane was well-liked. This might be the right fit long-term, but we'll have to see how it plays out for sure.
Exactly.
So let's look at a couple other stories. I know we're running short on time here. FIFA blocked the Barcelona-Girona match in Miami, Rob. What does this mean for Relevant Sports? What does this mean for La Liga and autonomy? Do you think that this will get overturned?
Well, when there's money on the table. the crony capitalism is a funny business, Joe. You and I both know this.
Definitely.
But how far can you get until when you're dealing with the governing body of sport, who are obviously trying to clean their image in this sense? But man, this is tough. This is going to be really tough. I mean, it kind of reminds me of this Paulo Guerrero scandal for some reason. You know, mm-hmm. the fact that he was free to go, and then he was banned, then he was free, and then he's banned. That kind of stuff. You know, this definitely could go to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. And I wouldn't be surprised if it does as well.
I think it will. And for me, you know, just as an unabashing American, it's okay for us to send our NFL matches over to you guys in Europe, but it's not okay for you guys to send your regular season match over to us in here. You know, that's where I'm like, you know what? Shut up and get on a plane and get over here. I mean, seriously, the amount of equipment that you have to bring, the amount of personnel you have to bring for an NFL game for one team, okay? Is ridiculous. And they played, I believe, three NFL matches in Europe or in England. Yep. The flight's the same. Get on the plane, shut up, and put the big boy pants on and let's go.
Seriously. You wish it was that easy, Joe.
It should be, but yeah, what do I know, right?
So exactly. There you go.
All right, let's move on because I know we're running short. Copa America. The dates are going to get changed starting in the 2020 Copa America, where it is going to correspond with the dates of the Euros. For me, Rob, I love this move. I think this is a move that should happen around the world. Those continental championships, CONCACAF Gold Cup, Copa America, Euros, African Cup of Nations, those should all happen on that even year that is not the World Cup year. And I think it would be great. And I think even if the federations wanted to take that continental tournament and use it to qualify for World Cup, I'd be fine with that. But this ridiculousness, especially with the Gold Cup, where we see an odd year matchup happen. You get two teams, then we've got to play a third match if Mexico wins one and the U.S. wins another, and then we got to play again. And it's like, it's ridiculous, people. Just play it once, be done with it, and let's go. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think the last time they did this was 2004. But now, here's the one thing I'm suggesting, though.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with that off year?
I think you use it to qualify.
Exactly. There you go. I think for that summer, you move the dates, because I think qualifiers in March, September, October, November.
Mm-hmm.
So how about taking one out and putting it in June?
Amen. Amen. I think that's the right way to go.
Or not even that, because I think how many games are played in each calendar? Like two?
Something like that. Two every international break.
Put like three or four in 1 month.
Exactly.
That way you can get a quarter of it done by the time of that Copa America is finished.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I agree.
So that's my idea.
I completely agree with you. 100%. So some quick other breaking news. Our good friend Stel Stylianos just tweeted on Twitter. Of course, that's where you tweet. That he's hearing that Toby Otterfield will be going to United in January. You like that move?
At this point, the United need anything to improve their defensive woes. Definitely. So, yeah, good move for him, I think.
Let me. I know we got to get our commercial in here. Let me get the commercial in here, and then we'll get the matches coming up this week, Rob, okay?
Yes, sir.
Let's do that. Onnit is a health and fitness juggernaut dedicated to delivering total human optimization to its vast customer base of athletes, thinkers, fitness gurus, and entrepreneurs. Through a wide array of products and supplements, Onnit combines cutting-edge science, earth-grown nutrients, and time-tested strategies to help people reach peak performance. Whether you are climbing mountains or biking down them, building businesses or closing sales, chasing PRs in the weight room, or running a marathon, Onnit is the brand you want in your back pocket. As one of the fastest growing health and fitness companies in the world, Onnit refuses to bring anything but the very best to market. Whether it be energy bars, protein shakes, creatine, or their flagship product, Alpha Brain, Onnit's diverse lineup of products and supplements are backed by science and research. You can save up to 10% off by visiting www.onnit.com and using promo code BEYOND. That is www.onnit.com and using promo code BEYOND to save up to 10%. Thanks again to our friends over at Onnit, our sponsors here tonight. Rob, I'm going to get into the matches of the week. First ones first, Gremio River Plate tomorrow night, 8:45 p.m., second leg of the semifinal. River Plate going in on a 1-0, down 1-0 to Gremio. Gremio winning the first matchup on the road. You see Gremio or River Plate advancing on that one?
Ooh, that's really tough. Wow. Oh, man. Well, I think what Tim has said, I think if you remember what he said last week, I think Gremio are the better team. I think River Plate are still struggling with injury at this point. I think it was a big blow for them to lose at home. Okay. I mean, that's a huge blow for any team. So that only gives advantage to Gremio. I think Gremio, with the team they have and the depth that they have, I put Gremio on this one. I think Gremio qualifies to their second straight final.
And on the other leg, we've got Palmeiras hosting Boca Juniors Wednesday at 8:45 p.m. Boca going in with a 2-0 lead. We have a Argentina versus Brazil final.
Dangerous lead, Joe. That is a dangerous lead to hold, because one goal for Palmeiras early on could really change it all. But having said that, I think we will see Gremio take on Boca Juniors in an all final, in an all Argentine Brazil final.
That'll be fun. The other matches to watch this week. On Friday, we kick off PSG Lille at 3:45 p.m. Then we've got a host of Saturday matches, Rob. The introduction of Santiago Solari, Real Madrid, Valladolid on Saturday, 11:15 a.m. Serie A gives you Fiorentina Roma Saturday at 1 p.m. Then we move over to the Bundesliga at 1:30 for Hertha Berlin, RB Leipzig. And the final one, which we're going to dub the match of the week, Arsenal-Liverpool, Saturday, 1:30 p.m. as well. Arsenal playing very, very well, especially with Unai Emery getting this team turned in the other direction. Been absolutely a joy to watch, and we'll see if they can continue that against the number one team, arguably the number one team in the league in Liverpool. So those are our matches of the week. Rob, I'm going to give you the trivia question one more time. Mm-hmm. Okay. Pertaining to Real Madrid managers, how many, since the 92-93 season, how many different people have managed Real Madrid? Second part was how many have played for Real Madrid? And the third is who had the most appearances for Real Madrid of those players?
All right. I'll give you the first one. I'm going to give you just a curveball on this one. Yep. 23.
Wow, you are so close. 22.
Wow.
Benito, okay. Benito Florio, Vicente Del Bosque three times, Jorge Valdano, Arsenio Iglesias, Fabio Capello twice, Yopankis, Jose Antonio Camacho twice, Gus Hinnick, John Toshak, Carlos Quiroz, Mariano Garcia, Ramon Vanderlei Luxemburgo, Juan Ramon Lopez Caro, Bernd Schuster, Juan de Ramos, Manuel Pellegrini, Jose Mourinho, Carlo Ancelotti, Rafa Benitez, Zinedine Zidane, Julian Lopetegui, and Santiago Solari as the caretaker. 22 managers. How many of them have played for Real Madrid?
Okay, off the top of my head, Zidane, Solari.
Yep. Let's see, you don't have to name them. You can give me a number.
Oh, wow.
I'll give them to you after, but you can give me a number.
Four?
Eight.
Eight. Oh,
Vicente Del Bosque, who coached the team three times. Jorge Valdano. Jose Antonio Camacho. Mariano Garcia Ramon. Bernd Schuster. Zinedine Zidane. Julian Lopetegui. And Santiago Solari.
Okay.
Who had the most appearances out of those eight names?
Del Bosque.
Del Bosque. 445 appearances. Jose Antonio Camacho had 414. Who had the least?
Benitez?
Julian Lopetegui, one appearance. So that's a pretty cool twist
cool.
on that on the question. So without anything else left on the docket, my friend, let me hit the closing music.
Let's do it.
All right. And again, thanks to our friends over at Onnit for sponsoring the show and Beyond the Pitch in general. So for episode 222 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Mr. Sir Bob Mike Orr for joining us. Next week, we're going to have more MLS playoff coverage, and we're going to look at the second half of the Champions League and Europa League as we get set for match day four. So for episode 222 of Low Limit Football, I'm Roberto Rojas. I'm sorry, I'm not. I'm Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
You certainly are. Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.